Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I don't think it's a new talent of mine or anything of the sort, but as I was just now posting my tweet to preview the show, I came up with a rhyme just completely off the top of my head. So completely organic. Again, I don't think it's a new talent of mine. I can't do voices and I don't write poetry. However, I have many other hidden talents. One of those is talking about sports for a living. Despite a lopsided game on Monday Night Football, I found plenty to write about on my note cards. I'll be honest. I was going to take a photo of this and then I thought, maybe not. I don't need everyone to see what I wrote on my note card. But at the top of each card for the football games that I watch and take notes for, I write some phrase or sentence that will remind me of the overarching theme. And it was still in the first quarter when I wrote on my purple index card, MNF, bloodbath. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Now, there's a lot more we can take away from it, but that was what we saw on Monday night. Safe to say the Jets are not ready to challenge for the AFC East title. I don't know what happens the rest of the way, but I do know the Jets series against the Patriots this season, it's still lopsided. This was a game in which Sam Darnold got punched in the gut. Not literally, although that might have happened. I may not have seen it. But you have to admit that it was pretty funny to hear him mic'd up saying, "I'm seeing ghosts." Now, I don't know if it's because he was thinking about Halloween. Ooh, Halloween candy. Maybe he was planning his Halloween costume while he was out there on the field. But it is extremely comical that in mid-October, what we hear from Sam Darnold while he's mic'd up is, "I'm seeing ghosts." I just wanted somebody to ask him post-game if that was a reference to Halloween. And yet, how in the thick of things, in the heat of the moment, could he have come up with that? Sometimes whatever's in our heart or our brains from earlier in the day or something we've been thinking about, it kind of comes out our mouths. And so you never know. It could have been a Halloween reference simply because Darnold was planning a party. It wasn't a party for the Jets on Monday night, but it was a big-time party for the Patriots and their defense. In fact, one member of the Patriots' defense actually made reference to the fact that it was a big party out there. Huh. I don't think that's what you're going for. When you're an opponent of any particular team, you don't want them to consider it a big old party. Not even if it is preparation for Halloween and there'll be candy. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams with their help, and they can help you too. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. I know that many of you, whether you follow me on Twitter or Facebook or whether you don't, could right away tell me the best part of Monday Night Football for me. So if you know me, you know exactly what I was geeked up about during Monday Night Football. I did enjoy being somewhat snarky and sarcastic about the Jets, though. They don't really want to win this game. That was one of my tweets. They don't really want to win this game, do they? Oh my gosh. How do you know if your defense can match up with the Patriots' offense when you keep giving them a short field and when you make them get back out on the field before they've had a chance to sit down, grab some water, and take a breather? How do you even know how your defense matches up? You put them in such awful positions over and over and over again. We do know that the Patriots' defense is fantastic, though. This is the New York drive sheet. Interception, punt. Three and out, by the way. Interception, three and out. Fumble, interception. turn the ball over on downs. That was the first half. Second half, interception, safety, interception, three and outs the rest of the way. I believe there were three, maybe four more drives, but this was brutal. And that's exactly the word that Adam Gase used to describe the game after the fact. So we will hear from Adam Gase. Sam Darnold, of course, was asked to explain what he meant when he said on the field, "I'm seeing ghosts out there." So we'll get his explanation. Just to clarify, I think it's ridiculous to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I know he's a baby quarterback still. It's only his early in his career. We're talking about a second-year quarterback who just missed the first month plus of the season because of an illness. So he couldn't practice. He couldn't go to meetings. I mean, he's a young quarterback. He's a young man. Forget just young quarterback. And we know the experience that Bill Belichick brings to the table. We also know the experience of that secondary. The collective experience of the Patriots secondary, it's overwhelming. Their starters alone have 30-plus years of experience. I mean, this is a group of guys who've pretty much seen and done everything on the football field, and because of that, Belichick can use that versatility to confuse opposing quarterbacks. Is Sam Darnold a bust? Hell no. This young man is really smart. He works extremely hard. You can see the progress already. So no, Darnold is not a bust. This wasn't a poor choice by the New York Jets. All is not lost because of one bad game. It happens. Poop happens. And it happens when you face a defense as good as the Patriots and you don't make smart decisions. Darnold will be the first to tell you that. He made really poor decisions when he was under duress. I like the fact that Le'Veon Bell offered some advice to Sam Darnold.
He felt like it was like one of the worst games he ever played. And I said, "Hey, bro, it's always been games like that where you don't play well. And now you know you only can play better from here on out, you know? Like, you can't play no worse than you played tonight."
That's what Le'Veon Bell said to him. I mean, the truth hurts sometimes, but you might as well cut to the chase. Le'Veon Bell said there are going to be games like these. Mama said there would be days like these. But, you know, you can't play any worse than you did tonight. I mean, if you can't rely on your family, and your football team is your family, if you can't rely on your family to tell you the truth, then who can you rely on? It can't get any worse than it was tonight. You can't play any worse than you did tonight. No place to go but up, says Le'Veon Bell. I love that. I do appreciate Bell's honesty. Brutal honesty. There's that word again. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. A-Law Radio is where you can find me on Twitter. Many of you have already found me on Twitter because you know I'm all geeked up about something that has nothing to do with football. Also on our Facebook page, if you haven't yet voted for Monday MVP, well, we're down. That poll is still live on my Twitter or on Facebook, on our show Twitter as well. This was a game in which the Patriots took advantage of every opportunity that the Jets offered them. Someone put up a meme is a still photo? No, a meme is a GIF? Wait, what's the difference between a meme and a GIF, millennial?
Well, a meme could be either a moving image or a still image. A GIF is always something that moves.
But a meme, it could be a meme if it's moving.
Yes.
So can I just call it a meme from now on?
Sure.
Oh, okay, good. Because people get mad at me when I say GIF because they think it should be GIF. It's on TV again right now. Okay, so there was a meme out there. It was a video of... I don't remember exactly what it was that the guy was handing off, but it was Chris Rock, and he was like, "No, you take it. You take it. No, you take it." Essentially, like, "You take the football. No, you take the football." My idea was that the Jets have unmatched hospitality. They wanted so badly for the Patriots to come into their home and have a comfortable stay. They went to such great lengths to welcome the Patriots to MetLife Stadium. Not every team will take advantage of the hospitality. Not every team will take advantage of the short field. Not every team will use those turnovers to flip the script. But the Patriots will, and they did over and over again.
Brady under center, third down and two from the three of the Jets. Gets the snap. He pitches out. It goes to Michelle. Got a block at the five. He runs into the end zone. Touchdown over the left tackle. With blockers ahead, three-yard touchdown run. Third and goal, I formation. Brady under center from the one. Hands up, balance of block. Over the right tackle, handoff. It goes to Michelle, and that's a touchdown for New England. Another one. Michelle has got his second rushing touchdown tonight. 9:18 in the second quarter. And it's 23-0 New England to cash in again on a turnover by the Jets. Third and goal at the one. Brady under center. I formation. Gets the snap. Hands off to Michelle. Back to back from the tight end. Tomlinson. Touchdown. For a third time tonight, Sony Michelle. Touchdown, New England. And the lead is 32-0 over the Jets.
Kevin Harlan on the Westwood One radio network. So, yes, it was a lot of Sony Michelle. It was a healthy portion of Tom Brady dinking and dunking. And from the first drive, they were working on the ball control. Now, they didn't have to work on it, considering what happened with the Jets' turnovers, but initially they established their ball control with a 16-play drive. Patriots started the game with a 16-play drive that covered nearly 9 minutes. So by the time the Jets got the ball back, whew, they're chomping at the bit. I shouldn't say got the ball back. By the time they got the ball, they're ready to go. And then, womp, womp, womp. Three Sam Darnold turnovers in the first half, plus a three and out, led directly to the Patriots' 24 points. Again, you cannot play a team with this much experience, with this much talent, and not expect that those turnovers will burn your rear end. And they did. So the Patriots picked off Darnold again to begin the second half. And then there was a safety on the second drive of the second half. It really went from bad to worse. And part of what that defense was doing was blitzing him. And you probably heard a lot of talk on the TV, whether you're watching on Monday Night Football or whether you were listening to the radio. There was a lot of talk about zero blitzes. And I appreciate Kurt Warner, who is along with Kevin Harlan on Westwood One, explaining the zero blitz and why it can be so not only scary for a young quarterback, but also confusing. And clearly, as Sam Darnold said, he was hearing footsteps, he was seeing ghosts, he was feeling that pressure, and he was anticipating it sometimes before it even got to him. 11 of 32 for Sam Darnold, 86 yards, four interceptions and a fumble, and a 3.7 passer rating. Anybody out there have Sam Darnold starting on their fantasy team tonight? That kind of wouldn't have been a good play since they were facing the Patriots defense, but I don't know if you can have negative points in fantasy. Well, you can, right? You can have negative points in fantasy. Ooh. I wonder if it was a negative score for Sam Darnold. Don't be sending him tweets about how he lost your fantasy football matchup. It's not his fault. I mean, seriously. The Patriots moved to 7-0 for the third time in franchise history. First time since 2015. Brady, 31 of 45, just shy of 250 yards, had a touchdown, did have an interception as well. But once again, that defense gave him and the Patriots offense a great cushion. When you've got a defense like that who continually hands you the ball over and over, giving you short fields and extra opportunities, man, it is a luxury.
They're just playing great football. They're doing a great job. They cover rush, stop the run, make critical plays. So they're just, it's awesome to watch.
It is that. If you're a fan of defense, and going back to the Super Bowl going back to the Super Bowl in February, the end of last season, that Patriots defense no doubt outscored Sam Darnold in fantasy. Dave just said in my ear, what, minus 2.66?
That would be, yes, negative 2.66, while the Patriots defense scored 28 fantasy points.
Oh, dear. How are you feeling in there, Jets fans?
I have the Patriots defense on my fantasy team, so I'm doing okay.
What?
No, we feel terrible.
That's fake football. That's not real football.
No, we feel terrible about this loss, but at the same time, we expected them to lose.
Oh, you did?
At least in this game.
Interesting, because I saw a bunch of people who were, I don't know, nervous about this game, because I follow a lot of New England peeps, and some of them said they were nervous about this game. I mean, sometimes the Jets battle them really hard at MetLife, so I don't know.
I was confused by the overly optimistic attitude, I think, of the Jets fans this week. I've been a Jets fan my whole life. I didn't think it was going to be this bad.
Huh.
But I said to Chris last night, I thought they were going to lose by about 13, maybe two touchdowns. Huh. Chris, I think, thought it was going to be more of a blowout than I did.
Hmm. So which of us feels worse? Like, is it Jets fans right now, or is it Broncos fan? I mean, I'm the only one here, but poof. Misery loves company, so I guess the good thing we're all stuck together. Yeah, super fun. Okay, so you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Coming up, you're going to hear from Adam Gase, the ugly truth, although I don't know that it'll be any better than what Le'Veon Bell said to Sam Darnold. You can't play any worse than you just did. Darnold explains what it means when he says he's seeing ghosts. And we're also going to jump right into a World Series preview as well. So 20 minutes away, Ben Ryder of Sports Illustrated will join us from Houston. He's there to get ready for the opener of the Fall Classic. So a jam-packed first hour. Want to hear from you as well on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Thanks so much for joining us. Our second show of the work week. I'm excited. You know why I'm excited. It's CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Here comes Collins on a blitz. Darnold quickly unloads, and he throws an interception right into the hands of Devin McCourty, who zigzags across the 15-yard line and is dropped at the 12. The Patriots went after Darnold, and McCourty has another pick. His fifth of 2019. Bell to the left of Darnold, who takes the snap. Drops back with a twist up front. Throws off the back foot of the end zone. Picked off by Daron Harmon. Harmon lands across the goal line and then touches down with his right knee for a touchback. Stands in the pocket. Throws off the back foot of the end zone. Intercepted. Leaping in front of the intended receiver, the former Jet Terrence Brooks. Another back foot throw. Picked off by the Patriots.
Atta boy, Sammy D. Off the back foot all day.
We have a lot of good players, and they played well tonight. So give the players credit for, you know, their effort and, you know, their playmaking. We'll see what happens next week. You know, we got a big challenge ahead of us with the Browns, so we'll see what happens. But, you know, each week's a challenge in this league, and, you know, you're only as good as your last game. So we'll have to, you know, see what we can do next week.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Bill Belichick, proud of his guys, certainly proud of their preparation, and it was pretty impressive to see him on the sidelines during a game in the first half in which clearly the Patriots were owning the Jets, the ball control, the turnovers, their own offense, and yet he's right in the middle of a huddle waiting for them to do a quick celebration following a turnover and then right back into coaching and teaching and preparing and sharing with him what he saw. I mean, he is such an incredible asset to the franchise, but also we're watching a once-in-a-lifetime, a generational coach. So I'm just impressed by the way he operates, and clearly he sets the tone for that franchise and has now for 20 years. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. Sam Darnold mic'd up on Monday Night Football, and after one particular turnover, an interception, when he just threw the ball up for grabs, I don't even know who he was throwing at. He came off the field and said, "I'm seeing ghosts." So yes, of course, the media wanted to know what he meant by that.
When I talk to the coaches, I just got to be, you know, straight up. And, you know, for me, I just got to see the field a lot better. That's kind of what that means. And, you know, just it was a rough day out there, rough night out there. And obviously, I got to be better and learn from the mistakes. But we will get better.
When we go back and look at this, he's not going to be happy. He probably was feeling like guys were coming free when they might not have been. You know, it's tough. That's what playing against these guys. If you don't pick some of this stuff up early, they're going to keep bringing it, and they're going to find different ways to bring it, and then it's just going to get bad from there, which it did.
It definitely did. It's a snowball effect, or forget snowball. It's an avalanche effect. It starts small and slow and then picks up debris and snow and ice and comes crashing down the mountain. And again, against a lesser team, a team that's not as talented, that doesn't know how to take advantage of the extra opportunities, maybe those turnovers, at least a couple of them, don't burn you. But that's not the deal with the Patriots. Looking at the Pats' record to this point, there's been a lot of talk about who they've played. And that's legitimate, but they will face some more difficult tests. They've taken on the Steelers. That was the season opener, so neither team had a win. But they allowed 3 points. At Miami, it was a shutout. So similar to what we saw on Monday Night Football, allowing no points. Versus the Jets in their first game, they gave up a couple of touchdowns. Against the Bills, 10 points. At the Redskins, 7 points. Against the Giants, 14 points. Wait, wasn't the Redskins touchdown, though? Wasn't it a pick six? I could be wrong, but I think the Redskins. One of these teams, though, had a pick six, so it wasn't even the defense giving up the touchdown. May not have been that one. Maybe it was against the Bills or the Jets. In one of those games, it was a pick six off Brady, so it wasn't even the defense giving up the touchdown. But collectively, as a team, in no game have the Patriots given up more than 14 points. So we've talked a lot about the defense for the San Francisco 49ers and how now in 3 games they've given up a total of 10 points. In back-to-back games, not even 100 passing yards combined. But the defense for the Patriots is right there. I have no idea what the Super Bowl holds, but if you liked last year's Super Bowl and we end up with Patriots-Niners, well, we could be in for a repeat. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We'll do a lot more on Monday Night Football and Week 7 now in the books. But we're going to pivot and look ahead to the World Series. The opener is hours away now in Houston. So Ben Ryder will join us.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Here's the kick now. The pitch, fastball, is hit in the air to left center field. Robles calling for it. He's under it waiting, and he makes the catch! He makes the catch! Bang! Zoom go the fireworks! A National League Championship winning! Curly W is in the books! And for the first time since 1933, we'll have a World Series in the nation's capital!
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It seems like forever ago that the Nationals swept the NLCS, but Charlie Sloz with the final call as they advanced to their first World Series. The Astros joined them with a ninth inning walk-off Saturday night in the ALCS, and we are nearly there. Game one of the Fall Classic will start in mere hours at Minute Maid Park in Houston. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're pleased to connect now with Sports Illustrated senior writer Ben Ryder, who is in Houston to cover this World Series. A lot of the talk, Ben, is about the pitching staff. And I know the old adage is chicks dig the long ball, but I actually want a pitcher's duel here and there. So what tells you that this series could be different than maybe the 5-hour games we've seen so far?
Right. Well, I still think we're in for some long games because that's what we get this time of year. But you can make a strong argument that we are seeing the two best pitching staffs, at least 1 through 3, in the game. Of course, Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, and Zach Greinke on the Astros side, Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Patrick Corbin on the Nationals side. In this era of bullpen dominance, of bullpenning, of relievers carrying more of the load than ever before, this should be a classic World Series whose outcomes will largely hinge on the performance of those starters.
How do you like the Nationals' choice of Patrick Corbin instead of Anibal Sanchez, considering how he performed when he had the opportunity?
I think it's the right choice. I mean, Patrick Corbin, of course, their big free agent signing this offseason. He's done nothing to not deserve that number 3 starting role. But, you know, Anibal Sanchez, especially with his recent accomplishments, does seem on paper to provide the Nationals with the advantage in game four, which will probably be a bullpen game for the Astros, heavy load maybe carried by Brad Peacock or Jose Urquidy. The Nationals could use a game like that, because the fact is, if they want to win this World Series, they're going to have to beat either Justin Verlander or Garrett Cole in one of their starts. And, of course, their number three is Zach Greinke, who's overshadowed a little bit on this rotation, but is still, by any metric, a top 10 or 12 pitcher in the big leagues. So it'll be a tall task for the Nationals, even despite their great rotation.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the whole bullpen game thing, which is, again, a 2019 deal. It's really taken on prominence, even in the playoffs. How do you like this kind of piecing together a start in which sometimes it's a closer who's beginning a playoff game?
Well, it's not option A for any club. Any club would love to have what the Astros or Nationals have, which are at least three dominant starters. You can take a lot of innings, see the batting order not just once, but two or three times. But certainly as a way for other teams that don't have that, because that's very expensive and hard to come by, the opener strategy, the bullpenning strategy, is a way to compete and even win, just not this year.
So then why did the Astros do it at the end of the, well, not the end of the ALCS, but why did they use that strategy?
Well, because they don't really have better options. You know, Wade Miley, for most of the year, seemed like a great number three starter before they acquired Zach Greinke. He was acquired for 1 year, $4.5 million as a free agent. He was one of the better pitchers in the American League
right
up until the end of August. He had a 13-4 record, a 3.06 ERA, totally fell apart in September, 21 earned runs in 11-plus innings, to the point where the Astros really couldn't trust him. He wasn't even on their ALCS roster. So, yeah, it's just necessity, really. Mm. It's a strategy born of necessity that after Verlander, Cole, and Greinke, this is certainly their best strategy by which to hope to win.
Mm. Ben Ryder is with Sports Illustrated covering the World Series. He's now joining us for a couple of minutes after hours on CBS Sports Radio. We talk about bullpens, of course, because of the way they have to fill in the gaps. And when you talk about Nationals and bullpens, it has been literally one of the worst in the entire National League all season. Now, I know they've won 16 of their last 18 games. They've managed to cover it up, certainly against the Cardinals. But how much more of an advantage is it for the Astros when you look at what they have in their pen?
Now, the Nationals' bullpen was nothing short of a disaster for most of the regular season. They had a 5.66 ERA, 30th out of 30 teams in Major League Baseball. It's pitched a lot better this postseason. Daniel Hudson, a trade acquisition, has been really good as the closer. Sean Doolittle has reestablished himself. They've gotten some really good innings out of Tanner Rainey. But certainly the Astros have to be looking at that pen and thinking, you know what, if we don't get to Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, Sanchez, we might have a shot to score some runs later in the ballgame.
Before we talk a little bit about Astros and Nationals hitting, want to ask you your reaction to what Aaron Judge said after the ALCS. He said anything short of the World Series is a failure. And we're talking about a team that won 103 games, its first division title since 2012. When you hear him say that, what's your reaction?
I mean, I think that that's the reality, especially for a team as talented as the Yankees. It's also a reality in the current playoff structure of baseball that great teams have a difficult time getting through the playoffs to the World Series. I mean, you could argue that fundamentally the Astros were better than the Red Sox last year. They lost, of course, in the ALCS. It's really hard to navigate those three rounds. It's often the case that the best team does not emerge as the champion, but on the other hand, that does keep things exciting, gives everyone a chance. What I'll say about the Yankees is they're not going anywhere anytime soon. They'll be right back there next year, possibly having signed what really emerged as their big need in the last series, which is a top-line starter. There are a few of them who are going to be available on the free agent market, headlined by the Astros' own Garrett Cole.
Right, no doubt. In fact, working in New York City, where CBS Sports Radio headquarters is located, on Monday morning, the talk was about Garrett Cole and what it might take to lure him to the Yankees. Oy, they're already into their hot stove season.
It's going to take a record offer for sure. David Price certainly has a record, $217 million for a free agent pitcher. There's no doubt in my mind that Gerrit Cole will exceed that.
But there are teams out there now, many of them actually, who don't want to pay the exorbitant luxury taxes. The Red Sox are making changes to try to get under that threshold. So how many teams could actually or would actually offer him that money?
Well, that's true for most free agents, but Gerrit Cole is not most free agents. He is pretty inarguably the most dominant pitcher in the league right now, even more dominant than his teammate, Justin Verlander. You look around the league, there are plenty of teams who might not want to spend money on other free agents, but will pour out their wallets for this guy, whether it's the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Yankees. Expect the Astros to be in there as well, but it wouldn't be a very Astros thing to do to spend that much on a single player.
So do you think the chances he leaves Houston are relatively high?
I think they're really high. You know, I write in my book, Astroball, about the financial discipline, among many other things, that have taken the Astros to this point. They're pretty unsentimental about their own players, as much as this two-year relationship has benefited them, as great as it's been. For the future, I would be surprised if the Astros emerge as the winning bidder, although there's certainly a chance.
Ben Ryder is with Sports Illustrated in Houston to cover the World Series, and as he mentioned, also the author of Astro Ball, The New Way to Win It All. So, Ben, what is that? What's the new way to win it all?
Well, there's a lot that goes into it. Certainly the underpinnings of this incredible run the Astros have been on, turning what was the worst baseball team over a three-year stretch back in 2011 to 2013 in 50 years into what's really a burgeoning dynasty, at least in baseball teams. Took a lot. It took not just analytics, but it took incorporating the human factor back into their decision-making. And it took a real patience on the part of the front office to build this team into what it is today.
How much does A.J. Hinch balance the two, or how does he balance the two, the analytics versus the human and instincts and his knowledge of the game of baseball, but also of his locker room?
Right. Well, the manager is a really key figure in this entire process, because the front office is providing him with all sorts of analytics, all sorts of numbers by which to make his decisions. But the final calls are his. He's the one who's on the ground. He's the one who understands whether his players are sick that day, whether they're lost confidence in their slider, all sorts of things that could suggest that the numbers he's equipped with might not actually play out the way they expect. Final decision-making power as far as the lineups and moves within game are with him, as is building a winning culture, and the Astros certainly have that.
Right. As for Davey Martinez, he had to engineer a comeback and kind of a team climbing out of a hole of 19-31 of their own doing to get to the point at which they are now. They've survived multiple elimination games, and their run through the NLCS was, it was a thing of beauty. What impresses you about the way that he has gotten them to the point where they're a World Series contender?
Right. Well, look, I mean, to be honest, I always thought that they should be this season. My preseason pick for Sports Illustrated was actually the Astros beating the Nationals in the World Series.
No way!
It was. It's on the record. You could find it on my Twitter account, among other places. But look, it wasn't looking so good, as you mentioned, early on in the season. But the ability to stick with it, to make adjustments, to add smart pieces by the front office, like Asdrubal Cabrera, who's played a big role, to overcome injuries. That's all been really impressive by the Nationals. And you're right. They absolutely destroyed the Cardinals in the NLCS. I believe that they actually scored more runs than the Nationals did, 20, than the Cardinals had hit, 16 that series. This is an absolute destruction. And a lot of that, of course, goes back to the big dogs, to those three starters, and Anibal Sanchez, too, who we've already talked about.
And yet one of my favorite, maybe more minor storylines about the Nationals is how many guys they've got late in their careers, like Ryan Zimmerman, like Howie Kendrick, like Kurt Suzuki. I mean, obviously Max Scherzer in his mid-30s. You've got guys who are hoping to win a World Series for the first time or going for the first time. And those guys came up with such key hits or key moments as well, even though it is very much a young man's game now.
No, you're right. And that's kind of one of these unquantifiable things that all of these analytical departments have trouble putting a number on, right? Is the idea of how do veterans like that impact the clubhouse? How do they imbue it with a certain relentlessness? How does everything that they've been through rub off on the younger guys on the team, like Juan Soto, Anthony Rendon, stuff like that? The Nationals certainly seem to have captured that magic, but, you know, the Astros have too.
Because you wrote this book and you spent some time with the Astros, I would love to get your perspective on Jose Altuve. I really love how A.J. Hinch said, I'm blessed to be his manager, or, you know, I'm fortunate to be his manager. What makes him special?
Well, you know, the Astros, and one thing I write about in the book Astro Ball is about their focus on growth mindset, on the ability of players to adapt, to use the information they're getting to improve, to make the most out of themselves, really. Nobody has a better growth mindset than Jose Altuve. This is somebody who in 2007 was signed out of Venezuela for $15,000. Even when Jeff Luno got there, he thought, hey, you know, maybe this guy will be a nice slap hitter with some speed, a good fielder. We'll keep him around. Well, with the Astros' help, he's turned himself into something much more than that. Of course, hitting the game-winning bomb off of Aroldis Chapman just the other night. One of the best players in the game at 5'6". There's never been anybody like him.
Well, the book sounds really fascinating. Will you have to add an addendum or something extra if they win another World Series?
I think we might. We'll see how it goes.
It's called Astro Ball, The New Way to Win It All. Ben Ryder, a senior writer with Sports Illustrated, covering the World Series with us from Houston. Ben, thanks so much for a couple of minutes. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Amy.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.